My name is Darren Johnson. We're going to get started. The idea behind today is really to go through, depending on where your ministry or church or where your group is at, is kind of looking at, from a whole digital perspective, your website. If you might be going through a website build, some things that you should be looking for in the person or group that you're looking at. For that, social media presence, some kind of tips on things to be doing. Strategic partnerships for organizations, which is super important, like we've talked about already at a couple of the other sessions this morning. And then being able to be found on search engines like Google. So those are kind of high-level talking points, but just wanted to kind of go through that before we get started. But I'd like to pray for us really quick, and then we'll get going. So, dear God, we just come before you this morning. We're so thankful that we get to serve you, dear God, going after this next generation. And we just pray that you continue to guide our steps and our minds and our hearts, dear God, as we think through how we should be doing our very best to serve you and bringing more people to know you, dear God. And we just pray for fresh ideas in this room. We invite your Holy Spirit to be in this room with us today. And we're just so thankful that we get to be here and fellowship with everyone over these few days. And just pray that you lead us in everything that we do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Real brief on myself. So my name is Darren Johnson. I'm from Minnesota. So love working with NGA and Palau on different initiatives all around the country. And so happy to be here to be going through kind of digital basics with y'all. So some initial thoughts as we are going through everything, if you guys have questions or things that you want to know about in the middle of it or anything like that, feel free to stop. Obviously, it's a pretty casual forum. But some things that I wanted to be thinking about, just maybe, you know, it's up to you if you want to write these things down. But, you know, how easy is it for people to find our organization if they're looking for us right now? That's something that it obviously is important, is if people are looking for you, making sure that you're able to be found. Who are we partnering with? You know, what types of organizations are we having strategic partnerships with? And that not only comes from an events and initiatives perspective, but also co-branding, which is, you know, the process of utilizing each other's audiences on avenues like social media and otherwise. Are we stepping out in faith? Which kind of touches on the partnership piece, and how do we get in front of those that might need what it is that we do as a ministry or event that aren't looking for us? So how do we figure out how to get in front of those people? So we'll kind of start off just looking at, you know, why we're all here and, you know, what's driving us. I feel like we're all here for the same reason, you know, making an impact and having that be driven by faith, you know, and as we kind of think through that, you know, one of the key components of that is reaching young people in new and different ways with engaging content, you know, reaching the lost and then those that are seeking God. And, you know, everything that we do from a social media perspective and digital perspective, you know, has potential to have an impact and be drawing someone in, which is why most organizations are putting a ton of thought and resources into trying to figure out what does our website look like, who's producing our content that's going out on social media, you know, where are we making and investing any dollars that are going to that as well, because it's not something that's like the next frontier or the next initiative. I mean, this is where we're all at right now. You know, from a partnership perspective, this is one thing that I just really felt like was necessary to touch on. There's been kind of this climate, I'd say over the last 3 years, maybe it's been going on longer than that, but I've been noticing it over the last probably 3 years where many, many organizations are realizing that they're not the best at everything. And so I just want to encourage everyone that's here, you know, for this conference and, you know, as you go about even your day-to-day lives when you're back home, wherever you're from, trying to think through what other organizations could we potentially be partnering with. So if there's this organization over here and we're trying to do this thing over here, what could we do together that there's just no possible way we could do unless God was behind it and if we work together on it? Because you can always go further if we are utilizing different parts of the body to come together. And that's one thing that we've seen be really successful with, you know, different events and different initiatives and having people adopt different things is having more groups, the better kind of that are partnering together. And so some things to think about when you're looking at strategic partnerships from a content and digital perspective are, you know, thinking through that cultivation of shared qualified audiences to reap the harvest together. So within this initiative, you know, what are the goals that we have, and do they align with this other organization? Are they the same? Are we going after the same type of people, the same demographic groups, that kind of thing? And through that process of kind of aligning yourselves and thinking through those things, you know, looking at doing specific targeting to those groups of people and having content flow and management that is being tracked through analytics, and then having strong CTAs, or which stands for calls to action, which equals, you know, engaging more folks with our ministries. So these are just kind of some things to definitely be thinking about when you're looking at, if you're looking at doing an event or launching an initiative in some way, you know, with a partner ministry or another church or something like that.
Can you give me an example of like how that works? What are you doing? Like, what is the Palau organization doing to cross-culture cultivate?
Sure. So, I mean, I guess an example would be like some of the partner ministries that, you know, have sponsored this event, as an example, would be, you know, an example of kind of this type of process. So thinking through another organization that has a similar audience, their, you know, maybe their directives or their goals are slightly different as far as what they want to come out of sharing that audience, but it's the same audience and the overarching goal is the same, which is to lead people to Jesus. So aligning yourself with organizations that have some of those kind of key identifiers, and then finding out what is that thing that you're working towards together, and then creating different messaging based on that. So, you know, you'll see a lot of things with Palau or with the Together movement, the Together 2020, which, you know, they have a booth out there where they'll be posting, you know, things about their event that's coming up, but they're tagging other ministries. And then likewise, if you clicked on those other ministries and go to their pages, they're talking about the Together movement, as an example, or Palau does the same thing with their partner ministries too. So thinking through with those partnerships, how can we utilize both of our audiences to have something go even further? And it's a great way, especially if you're, you know, whether or not funds are limited, but for most ministries they are, right? Let's be honest. you know, finding those partner groups and ministries that are willing to do that in a reciprocal way can have a huge, huge impact on you reaching more people in a huge way. If they're willing to share about it, because you're normally not paying them to share your post. But if you can just have conversations with them saying, hey, look, we're going after the same thing. We're doing this thing. Would you be willing to share about this on your page? We'll share about something that you're doing on ours. You know, having those kinds of things happen can allow you to have organic growth, you know, to your following on social media and things like that. So, yeah, good question. You know, when we're thinking through giving, there's, you know, we're not going to touch a whole bunch on this just because, you know, this isn't a development, you know, talk today. But I always like to talk about it just a little bit because I feel like sustaining giving in particular is a huge, huge thing for most ministries right now, trying to figure out how do we find ways to have ongoing giving. And so, you know, if you have someone in-house that's your development director, obviously this is something that they're probably talking about. If you're kind of a one-man ministry, you know, then this is something that you're thinking about. But, you know, having that be something that you're kind of going after, of looking at having something that's, you know, a small goal initially. This is just an example here of, you know, having a monthly target of, you know, 10 sustaining donors, you know, giving $30 a month. As an example, if you look at the course of a year, you start off with zero. And the first month you get 10, the second month now you have 20, et cetera, throughout the year. It's, you know, almost $24,000 in fundraising. And for a lot of people, when they're doing self-raising their own funds, self-fundraising, you know, this would be something that it's great if you can have people that are, you know, writing one-time checks and things like that. But finding a way to have this sustaining, you know, giving be part of your program is usually very, very necessary. So converting past supporters, you know, to have them be, you know, joining this program as an ongoing way to support you, utilizing their connection spheres as well. So asking those folks when you're having those meetings, you know, who else do you know who might be interested in supporting this initiative? If it's a face-to-face thing, if it's not a face-to-face thing and you're utilizing social media, then this would be, you know, selecting to target an audience that's connected to your audience. So going kind of one layer outside of yourselves. And the call to action here is, you know, making sure that you're converting those folks into monthly donors. I guess in the room, maybe it would be good to ask too, are all of you part of a larger ministry, or are there any, you know, one man, one person kind of ministries in here right now?
Small.
Couple?
Yeah.
Perfect.
I got a quick question for you, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Will we be able to get this presentation?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll be able to download the deck as well. So, kind of diving in a little deeper, we'll start to look at the search and social components of kind of how to be attracting those folks. So when you're looking at on the search engine side of things, I guess, how familiar is everyone here? Is anyone familiar with search engine optimization?
A little bit.
Heard of it? How about paid search, like doing ads on search engines? You guys have heard of it. Has anyone done these things themselves? So you're like, you guys are certified SEO people?
Certified. You went
too okay. Far. All right. Cool. So we're going to kind of talk through, you know, what these different components, how they work. So, I mean, there's on the search engine side of things, there's two main ways to be utilizing that for your ministry. So the first is through organic or, you know, search engine optimization based results. The other way is through paid search. So is anyone in the room familiar with, like, the Google Grant program?
Google Grant?
Yes. Okay. So well, I'm not going to, like, give you a pitch for Google, but the brief story is that if you're a 501c3 and you are not a hospital and you're not a school, there's probably a 95% chance that you'd be approved for a Google grant that will allow you to spend up to $10,000 per month. So just say that one more time really slow. $10,000 per month on paid ads on Google. So there is an application process that's pretty easy. It's all done online. But I just want to make sure everyone's aware of it because it can be a great growth tool for ministries that are just starting out, or even if you have been around for a while. There's some huge ministries that we've worked with that had no idea this existed. So you can...
Do they do it for ministries? Like, if I was offering a book on prayer, mm-hmm. would they allow me to... pay for that advertising, or is it
correct?
It's anything under the nonprofit
correct
umbrella.
There's a few, like, schools and medical facilities are the main ones that are excluded from the grant program. So that's why I said there's a 95% chance that you'd be approved, especially if you have the right person filling out your application for you to get verified. But
Darren, are you busy later today?
No, I'm not. We can talk about it. I love LifeLight. You guys are great. So kind of these things combined are, you know, what help drive that qualified traffic and conversion. So I think it's really important to think about on the search engine side of things, it's not just about increasing traffic. Like, it's not just about driving a million people to your website, because if you're driving a million people but none of those folks were actually looking for what you do, then that's not going to help you at all. So what we're talking about is very, very targeted approach of getting qualified traffic to your website and then converting them, not necessarily converting them to Jesus. I mean, that's the goal, right? But in this case, we're talking about a conversion, like a data point. So it means they did some trackable action that was our goal. So did they get put on our email list? Did they RSVP to an event? Did they give online? Hallelujah. You know, whatever that conversion point is for us in this scenario. So when we think about, you know, a search engine results page and who searches where, this is just an example here. So, you know, typically you're going to have, well, you can't even see the laser thing, but typically you're going to have, when you do any search, you're going to have a couple results at the top. It'll say ad, or it might say, like, sponsored, you know, right below. So that's a paid search result that's up there. Down below, you're going to have your organic or SEO driven search results that are down below. So when you think about how people search from a psychology perspective, Roughly 50% of people are going to be drawn to the search results that are down here, which are the organic or search engine optimized search results. Roughly a quarter of people, 25%, are going to be drawn to the paid search results just because it's the first thing that they see. And they're going to click on those, so that's the gray area here. And roughly 25% of people are going to find you through social media. So whether you're managing your digital presence yourself, or whether you're paying someone outside of your organization to do it, or whether you have a team member that's doing it, in a perfect world, you know, we would want, whether you're a search engine optimization type person, we'll call them green, because that's, you know, our graph over here, if you're a green person or a gray person who's drawn to these results, or if you're a blue person who's drawn to find you through social media, you want to make sure that your ministry is showing up in all three of those areas. So what that means is that if you do a search for something that has to do with your ministry and you're not showing up in the first one or two pages, realistically the first page of search results, people aren't finding you when they should be. So the two main things that I would recommend thinking about when you're thinking through this process is not only the main search terms that you want to show up for, but also what are those secondary ones that have to do with your ministry, but maybe it's not the first thing that's on your mind, but it's the first thing that's on their mind. So, you know, as an example, we've worked with some churches where, you know, they think that, well, hey, if someone does a Google search for Church Portland, I want to make sure that I show up. Well, yeah, that's obvious, but what are the other things, what are the other felt needs of your audience that they might be having that you would want to draw them in? And so for a lot of churches, there's other things that they offer, like, you know, MOPS programs, Mothers of Preschool Age Children is a huge, huge resource because there's tons of moms out there that are looking for things to do with their kids. It's a great entry point to bring them into church. Doing things like if people are Google searching how to get out of debt, financial planning, things like that. Well, you know, doing financial peace classes at your church of how to manage your debt is another great way to bring them into your church and then offer them other things, and hopefully they get introduced to Jesus. So those are just a couple examples. I could go on and on, but trying to think through kind of those second and third layer things that people might be searching for, or even our popular search results right now of things that people are in general are looking for, that can drive you back to your back to your ministry. Great example, you guys should all Google this right now, actually, is look up online. I forget the name of the article, but it's on Business Insider. It just came out a couple days ago because there's a group, a pro-life group, that did a bunch of back-end... I'm looking up the name of the article. Google Maps is pointing people who search for abortion clinics to anti-abortion groups and pro-life organizations. So there's a group of... I think it's like 7 or 8 pro-life organizations that all created this kind of collaborative. It's not like a public thing. There's no name for the organization. They just get together and strategize about things. The theory is that they went in and did a bunch of really, really good SEO so that when people are looking in Google Maps and trying to find their way to an abortion clinic, they get rerouted to a pro-life organization or a clinic that's Christian-run, so when they get there asking for it, they don't even realize till they're inside at the desk, but they ask for an abortion and they don't do them there. And then they tell them, we don't do them here, but like, why are you considering it? They start asking them questions and then lead them down a path of trying to share the gospel with these women. So there are a number of different ways that I could give different examples like that, but that's one that's just very recent. The article literally came out, I think, like 4 days ago on Business Insider online, but there's a lot of ways to kind of weaponize digital tools of trying to figure out how do we get these lost people to find out about the gospel. And this digital place of this device right here, which is making people feel more and more disconnected, can be used to be that initial touch point to then draw them into a point of real relationship with other people and then a real relationship with God. And so that is why I believe I'm here, is to help people with that process. So on the search engine side, again, in a perfect world, whoever's thinking through your strategy should be thinking through how do we show up organically when people are looking for us? How do they show up for paid search, or are we even doing that? And there is a way to optimize even your Facebook and other social media pages and going through that process of what are the key phrases we want to show up for, making sure that those are embedded in your Facebook page. So even that shows up down here as an organic search result. Excuse me. So when you're thinking through search engine optimization and organic traffic, right here on this page, it just kind of goes through kind of some of the high level overview of different things that someone should be looking at. If you're not familiar with all these things, that's okay. And if you do want to download the deck, that's great. But these are the things where if you are going through like a website redesign process with someone and they're designing your website, just asking them one question about search engine optimization is not enough. So if you say, hey, do you do SEO or redesign our website? 90% of website graphic guys are going to say, yeah, we do SEO. And the reality is that out of those 90% that say yes, there's a very small percentage that actually know how to do search engine optimization. They're going to put the content on the website just like you tell them to do, because usually it's provided by the client. And they're going to probably put one plugin or application on the back of your website that's made for search engine optimization to sort of help you be found. But they're not doing things like going through looking at your URL structure. They're probably not optimizing your social media pages. They may or may not be looking at your heading tags and the content on your page and counting how many times each word is mentioned for your type of ministry. Doing all the keyword research, which is a process of, we can go in and you could give me literally any key phrase or keyword, anyone that you can think of, and we could drill down and say, last month or last week it was searched this many times in your zip code, this many times in your county, this many times in your state, this many times in the country, this many times in the world, for any search term that you can think of. So going through that process of thinking through what are the search terms that we should show up for on a search engine, and are there 10 or are there 100 that we should be showing up for? Because if there's 100, that's a lot more work than if there's 10, which means you should probably have some help instead of just trying to do it yourself. Looking at a competitive analysis, so what are other organizations that are similar to yours doing to gain traffic? What search terms are they showing up for? Are they beating you in a ranking report if you guys are in the same geographical area? And then doing link building. So link building is the process of going out and finding other resource pages that are out there on the internet and having links that are built back to your website. So if I'm looking for a resource in a particular area and I go to someone else's website, being able to have a link that then comes back to yours. And then over here on this graph, basically it's just illustrating what most people already know, which is that Google is the big kid on the playground. So when it comes to search engine optimization, any work that you do, whether it's on your website or doing link building, is probably going to work on any one of these search engines. When it comes to paid search, we as a company typically only work with Google because of this right here. This is where most search traffic happens. So depending on where you're looking to invest your money, like, that's probably what I recommend, just because that's where more of the audience is, unless there's something very, very specific and a very good reason why you might use Bing. Would be like, as an example, if you're dealing with a more mature audience set, we'll say, and you know that based on looking at your traffic monitoring of your website, maybe you know that a large percentage of your audience is using PCs and not Mac. Well, a lot of PCs come with Bing preloaded on them, and a lot of people that are more mature or are older, we'll just say, they don't always change their preferred search engine when they buy a new computer, which means that they're probably likely lumped into this 15% of using Bing just because whenever they open their browser on their computer, it's just what's there. My parents are great examples of this. I had to put Google on there for them. So these are just things to think about. So if you have some initiative that's dealing with a subset of your current core audience, and you should have someone who can look at your analytics and see who's on your website and what devices they're using, and you need to pay for more of that particular audience to see more of your content, then like that would be an example of where I would do that. So this is just an example of looking at some search terms regionally. So we just dumped in a bunch of different search terms like church resources, church materials, different things like that to kind of get an idea of how many people are actually looking for this, you know, these particular things. So we came up with there's 78,000, you know, monthly impressions that are available. kind of have a breakdown here of how many of those are via computers, tablets, or mobile devices. So I'm just using this as an example so that you kind of get an idea of how we look at data when we're trying to determine, is there really a need to be increasing traffic? You know, are people actually looking for what it is that we offer? This is something that, you know, someone on your team, either internally or externally, should be trying to determine when you're building a new website or when you're looking at doing any paid search options. It's trying to figure out what does that traffic look like. And again, with my example, you know, you can get very specific whether it's a narrow geographic target. So is it just in our zip code? You know, are we only serving people that are right around our church or our location? Or are we trying to draw people into our ministry from a national or even broader level to determine how much traffic there actually is there?
Darren, quick question.
Yeah.
To be able to gain this kind of information that's relevant to us and our location, I'm assuming something like this isn't free to be able to access this kind of data, is it?
No, huh?
Okay. And nor would this be something that would regularly be lumped in with like a regular web post that we would already have? Probably not.
Your current web host should be able to give you some of the data of people that are on your site already. But as far as generally out in the the public who's searching for things, no, that wouldn't be something usually that's included. We did, for your ministry, this data is already pulled, just FYI, because we were talking with Josh about it like a year ago, I think, or something. So if you have questions, let me know, because I think our company already pulled this stuff for LifeLight. So, good question, though. There are plenty of tools out there that are free that can give you some of this data, just to be clear. And there are definitely a ton where if you want to pay for a license for doing this kind of traffic analysis and things like that you can do. Show of hands for in here, even within your ministries, is there someone who is dedicated to digital services within everybody's ministry in here? Or
Me.
Okay. So we got one. So one thing I would encourage you to think about doing, and this has been a huge benefit to us as a company as well, is looking at internship programs from colleges in your area, because they normally have a ton of students that are looking for internships that are very, very sharp. We were lucky because we're in Minneapolis, so we have Bethel University and Northwestern that are right there. We also pull from St. Thomas and the University of Minnesota as well. For our internship programs, but those students can be a huge, huge asset, especially if you're getting like a junior or a senior who are they want to go out into the career world very soon. Having them go through training, because there are Google certification programs for search engine optimization, for doing the ads on Google. There are a number of different classes and things like that for social media that are low cost or even free that you can do, because normally if you don't have someone on your team that's doing these things and you are a smaller organization where each person is wearing like 15 hats, having you, what's your name, sir?
It sounds like me, Jacques.
Jacques. So Jacques probably doesn't have time to go get certified in all this stuff and then try and do it himself too. So it's one thing I would definitely encourage anyone that has a smaller team is to look at internship programs in your area, because you can save a ton of money and at least have someone working on something instead of no one doing anything.
What are those people, one say they were Google, gave us a free, we went to a free session.
Sure.
And that was very helpful.
Yeah.
Of course, then they got advanced, and that you have to pay for. But
sure.
I think it might have been because I was already connected to them in some way with registry or something like that.
Sure.
So that's how I got to know that.
Yeah, they do offer different classes like that too. Yep. So when we're kind of thinking through on the social side, again, how those different process works of drawing people in. On the search engine side of things, there's two main components, which are what do the people type into that search engine? And then the second main component is where are they located? So when you're thinking through on the social media side, you still have the geographic area of targeting. So are we targeting the whole country or is it just one specific geographic area? But then the second component is everything else about that person. So how old are they? What are their interests? Do they play sports? you know, are they Christian? Are they not Christian? What school do they go to? Are they married? Not married? All these things can be kind of can be put into that process of choosing out which audiences that you are going to be targeting. So then having those plans be adaptable and then tracking your leads and conversions is super crucial so that you know what works, especially if you are spending money on ads, trying to determine which ones of the which pieces of content actually worked and led to a conversion, which one led to more people being put on our email list, which one led to that online donation, etc. So making sure that you have someone who's tracking that information and having those systems in place. Because we see tons of organizations that when we say, are you doing social media marketing? And they say yes. And we say, oh, okay, do you, you know, how are you guys utilizing that? And they say, oh, well, you know, we boost some of our posts. Or, you know, they're throwing $50 at things here, $100 at things there. But they don't really know what it's doing. They don't really know what the results are. So it's hard to determine and know, should we be doing that again? Did we pick the wrong audience? Should we use the same audience again? Should we be creating a new one? So having systems set up to make sure that you're not just throwing money away on one hand, and then also being able to, you know, show that to your donors, especially at a high level, if you're looking to go after a big donor or expand into having a larger percentage of donors that are giving larger amounts of money. Those are the types of people that love to see this kind of data. So, I mean, just talking from experience, like if you come to them with a presentation saying, out of this many people that came to our website, you know, we had this many people that looked at this event, we had this percentage of those that RSVP'd, this percentage of those that showed up, and then that led to 450 people giving their life to Christ at our evangelist event. You know, being able to walk them through kind of what happened, how people got there, and walk them through all the way from point A to point B, from the first touch through here was the result and here's how many people are, you know, whatever the results are, it is a huge benefit to people that have the giving capacity to give that amount of money normally want to know those kinds of things because they want to know what you're actually doing with those funds. So the benefit that we have on social media is there's an extensive amount of tracking that can be done on that demographic piece as well. So the first part usually starts with determining different persona groups, you know, based on needs. So as an example would be, you might have one persona, which is volunteer Vicky. So she is female. She is between, we'll say, 35 and 50. She probably has kids and lives within 15 miles of your event. We know that she has similar interests to probably you and also is, we'll say, a believer. She probably goes to church, different things like that. Volunteer Vicky would be someone that then you would want to target with opportunities for volunteering and things like that. Then you might have like Giving Gary, right? Which Giving Gary is married. He has a household income of over $120,000 a year, also has children, is faith-driven, goes to church, doesn't know about your ministry yet, he's not a fan, et cetera, et cetera. You identify all these data points, and then the next key component is creating specific content and goals for each group. So it means that if you are choosing to create content on social media to draw people in, there needs to be a goal and a focus. And it's not just going to be one post that's for all if you have a goal that's at the end of that line. Now, if you're just trying to keep your account active because that's all the time that you have is to just throw something up there, then at least you're doing something that's better than nothing. But if you're making an actual investment in paying for ads or boosting posts or targeting audiences, those last two pieces of creating different pieces of content for each tailored towards each audience and creating goals for each group is super, super important. And then being able to track all of that through a tracking system and having that data at your fingertips is going to help grow your ministry financially if you are approaching, again, either partner organizations, foundations, or individuals for larger gifts. Because I can't iterate enough. I've been in so many of those meetings where we're going for a big ask and they eat up this data when you can show that, and especially if you have a visual, you know, aid obviously that's showing kind of what it all looks like. Huge benefit. Average Facebook user has 338 connections, so like as an example, if you have 2,000 fans on your Facebook page, that's almost 700,000 people roughly, give or take, that are connected within those spheres. So I just wanted to give that as an example because most people, even if you have 2,000 fans on your Facebook page. Does anyone in here have 2,000 fans on their organization Facebook page? Right. Hey, so have you ever looked at like your insights? You know, of how many people see your posts and things like that? He's nodding his head yes. I know you guys have.
People like my posts.
Exactly.
I mean, I've got 3,000 people.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about that. So the reason for that is because a number of years ago, this is like a long time ago, but it used to be that if you posted something as a business page or organization page, it would show up somewhere in every one of your fans. It would show up somewhere in their feed. Okay. Now, as we all know, a lot of people, when you come back to your phone and you open up your Facebook, you know, it's showing that post that's right there. It's usually most people have it set to like the most recent one, or there are default settings of that it's the most engaging post based on activity of all the different things that you follow. There's a number of different settings that you yourself can adjust. But it used to be that if a page or organization that you followed posted something, it would be somewhere in your feed. You might have to scroll way down before you get to it. Well, then something happened. Facebook realized that they could make money on ads. And when they were going to go through their IPO and take their company public, they changed all their algorithms to make it so that now if you post something organically, typically it's only going to show up to between 4 and 11% of your audience, depending on the size and how many people engage with your content. So let's say that again. Between 4 and 11% of people normally are going to see your content if you're not putting any money behind any of your content.
You're saying that's all that shows up. That's not even who sees it. That's all that's going to show up in 4 to 11%.
Yep.
And then if they see it...
It depends on if they engage with it or not. So that's where it starts. Okay. Initially, it's 4 to 11%. And it can grow beyond that based on of that 4 to 11%. You know, let's say it was called 8%. 8% of your audience, I'm just making up a number, is 100 people. Well, all the algorithms are trying to figure out is who's getting more content more activity on the content that's out there that shows that it's interesting and cool or whatever word you want to put on it. So if out of those 100 people, only 2 people and I interact with it, well, Facebook's not going to continue to grow the number of organic people that it's going to show to. But if out of those 100 people that it showed to, 80 of them all of a sudden are commenting on it or having some sort of interaction, they're touching it or liking it or commenting on it, now it starts to go beyond that 4 to 11% and can creep up slowly, can creep up organically. So the only way around it is to start to pick and choose which pieces of content you want to put money behind. And then looking at these audience pieces, all this demographic information to look at who is engaging with your content and who is not, which is available, that is available for free on at least on the Facebook platform, of looking at their insights program of what do the people look like that are engaging with your post either through shares or likes or comments. And then choosing, you know, there's kind of 2 ways to look at what audience is engaging with you. The first way to look at it is, okay, well, it's great that we'll just, you know, go off kind of this example here of that like 70% of the audience is women. They're between 25 and 34 that are interacting. So then the question you have to ask yourself is, okay, do I want to pay money to show to more people that are women that are 25 to 34 because they have a better likelihood that they're going to like it? Or am I a men's organization that's running a men's ministry and that's... For this particular type of content, I probably should be focusing on the group that actually needs to see it. So you need to put money where people aren't engaging with it to get those numbers up. And is the content good enough? Why aren't people engaging with it? If this is content designed for men, then why are they not engaging? There's some hard questions that need to be asked if you're actually looking at the data points that are given to you about the content you're creating on social media. The data is there. It's just a question of whether you're actually looking at it. And then if you're looking at it, are you choosing to make changes to accomplish your goals and your mission? Because we see a lot of organizations that they're just putting content out there with no thought at all onto what their audience is doing with it, if they're actually engaging with it, if they're sharing it at all. Is it bringing people closer to Jesus? I mean, there's lots of different things to be looking at with every piece of content. So it is a very, very daunting task to have someone be managing it, but it's very important if you're trying to achieve growth in your ministry.
Do you have any idea of what the general percentage is of men versus women on Facebook and then the average ages and things like that? In other words, is Facebook as far as for a total, even marketing?
I don't have all those stats in this deck, but if you email me, I can send them to you. Because we do have them.
Yeah. Women, I mean, you think?
It is a higher percentage of women, yep. Yeah. But I don't remember the exact number. Facebook skews slightly older, but not by a ton. But there is some stats later on talking about like the number of people that log in based on age range and millennials and that kind of thing too. But if you email me, I can send you there. We have a whole list of those, but it's just too much math to put all into one deck. Good question. So here's talking about kind of the Facebook feed, things to look for. Content should be shareable. Again, tailoring to different audiences, but kind of pausing on the shareable piece. Just writing a text post on your Facebook page is probably almost never a good idea. You should always have some sort of image that coincides with the text piece of content that you're doing. We always would recommend that. Again, tailoring it to your different audiences. There's 2.5 billion monthly users, 1.5 of them are daily. Which is great, and it's constantly growing with 500,000 users added daily. 40% of people get their news from Facebook, which is super scary. but then also thinking through that, 1 billion of those users are mobile only. So thinking through what your content looks like from a social media perspective, as far as how the images and videos play on a mobile device is super key. But also thinking back to your website, which we're kind of going to circle back to that too, but how mobile friendly is your website is very, very important, because if people don't see what they're looking for on your website within the first 3 to 5 seconds, like they're going to click back on your browser and they may not ever come back. And that even goes if they engage with something on your social media account, but then they click through and end up at your website and that happens, that they could be backing out. So thinking through that mobile-friendly piece, whether it is social media content or on your website, is super, super crucial and totally worth the investment. If you don't have a mobile-friendly website, come talk to me afterwards, because I would love to try and find a way to get you to have a mobile-friendly website, because it's probably one of the first things you should be doing.
I need help with that.
Okay.
Like, I used to be pretty high in Google results.
Yeah.
And now it's not mobile-friendly, and I'm like not even showing up.
Yep. Yeah, so I think it was the end of 2017, so almost 2 years ago now, Google actually finally came clean with the fact that they show websites. From a search engine optimization standpoint, basically all any search engine is trying to do, if someone types in church resources, bless you, whatever city they're in, we'll say Portland, all the search engine is trying to do is show them the most relevant search results based on, we'll say, 7 checkboxes. So like the content that's on their website, if their images have data that are attached to them, their headings, et cetera, right? So Google actually came out and admitted about 2 years ago that even if your website content was more relevant than your competitors, if their website was mobile friendly and yours wasn't and someone was searching from a mobile device, they would show that site first because they care a lot about user experience. So it's not that they're trying to hate you for not investing in a mobile friendly website, it's just that they don't want people to blame Google for them being brought to a site that gives them a bad experience because it's not mobile friendly. So it's a huge, huge issue. We all knew that it had been going on for a lot longer than 2 years, but they finally came out with an article and admitted it after a conference that we were at out in California. So talking through Instagram, obviously the first couple things are the same. Make sure that it's shareable. Tailoring to different audiences. When we talk about shareable content, I think it's important to think through what that means. And this is a difficult point, I would say, for a lot of ministries. So when we talk about shareable content, it means that not only do we want you to think that it's shareable, but people have to think that it's shareable, which means that if you're, we'll say, a pro-life organization, which is great, and you support pro-life initiatives and you're anti-abortion or whatever that looks like, if all of your posts talk about like murdering babies and there's stats about that and there's photos that are kind of scary and that's what a majority of your posts are, that's not shareable to some people. Like, my sister's never going to share that post on her Facebook page because it's not like all happy-go-lucky and whatever. Not that we all need to be fake or anything like that, but it's important to think through what are some ways that we can still have content that has to do with our mission and our ministry, but it's not so in your face that someone who's not trying to be in your face can't share it to their page. So have some posts that are very, very direct, sure, and have some kind of scary pictures of the baby, and just using that example, you know, having some of those, but then also have some where it's just like, love life and a cute picture of a baby and that's it. There's no talking about being pro-life and anti-abortion and getting political and whether you're anti or pro-Trump or whatever. It's just a very simple picture because we know that that's going to get shared a bunch of times. And the more times it gets shared, that's more eyes that are on your ministry. It's more impressions where you're going to start to see that organic growth. So thinking through how can we create shareable content that has to do with our ministry but isn't so in your face that it's not shareable is, I would say, one key takeaway for today for people to be thinking about too. Bunch of fun user stats, but 71% of Instagram users are under 35. More teens on a study said that they do use Instagram more than Snapchat. This is all from a huge data poll that was done at the end of last year, so we don't have data yet for 2019, but I'm guessing it's going to continue to skew that way. It's not that there's not a need for using Snapchat filters and things like that to attract people to your ministry, but I'd be much more focused on the big two, which are Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is owned by Facebook. If you didn't know that, you do now. So when it comes to the way that their algorithms work and when it comes to how their ad processes work, they're all very, very similar and very, very much aligned, which is why you can very easily cross-post content between the two platforms and things like that. 95% of Instagram users say that they also use YouTube. So if you are doing video content, find someone in your organization or an intern who knows how to put that content up on YouTube and then use a bunch of different subject tags because it's another great way to draw people back into your ministry. And you can actually make money if you set it up right and get enough views. But 34% of all Instagram users are millennials. So when you're thinking through like what that shareable content looks like, you know, it doesn't always have to be something that's super flashy and things like that. I don't know if we're going to have any sound, but you know, trying to find ways that are going to draw people in just a few seconds because people are scrolling, right? So you probably only have a half second to 3 seconds before their finger is going to move again. So you want that beginning piece if you're doing video, you know, having something like that that's going to be colorful. It's going to be something that's going to hold their attention long enough to get to the actual point. You know, is something that's super important. So whether it's a visual image or whether it's a video piece, you know, we see a lot of organizations that spend a lot of money producing these great videos. They're super high quality. You could play them on TV. It could be a commercial. But they're like 7 minutes long. And then they want to try and get a bunch of views for that on their Facebook page or on their Instagram. It's like, most people aren't going to watch that long of a video. Like, they should be 15 to 45 seconds. And if you're, you know, paying to produce those spots and kind of within that range is going to be a much more valuable investment than trying to draw people in. That 7-minute video, that's what you show at your fundraising gala. That's what you show at this kind of event where you have people who are already in that mindset with you or are willing to be sitting in one place. But if you're trying to do that and promote that via someone who's scrolling in their feed, it's not a good investment. So we're just going to touch real briefly on kind of like this is just an example timeline. So if you're looking at implementing a new website build, you know, having that be kind of 8 to 12 weeks, we just are putting this kind of in here as an example. If you're working with a web design group and they start to give you timelines and then it gets dragged out and gets dragged out and they keep on changing things and the cost keeps going up, things like that, I would highly encourage you to run the other direction if those types of things start to happen, or if they're not willing to commit to a firm timeline in the beginning and give you those deliverables of exactly what they are and exactly what the cost is. We deal with this all the time where we get called like mid-project of saying like, we gave this company all this money and our website's only 30% done and they said that we used all their hours. It shouldn't be based on hours alone. It should be based on deliverables. What are you getting for that money? So is it X number of pages? Is it X number of plugins on your website? Different functionality, things like that. It should be a very specific project outline. And so we encourage everyone that if you are looking at a project like that, to have it be very specific so that there's no gray area, so that when you can hold that organization accountable and say, no, like, we gave you this amount of money, you owe us these specific deliverables. Because if it's just time and that's all that they're giving you your quote on is, well, we think it's going to take 80 hours. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean to you as a ministry? You know, you have a fiduciary duty to be careful with that money when you're spending, especially when you're trying to further your mission by expanding on this digital tool that you're creating. So I know we didn't like say anything in our description of this class about websites, but I just think it's really important for especially smaller organizations to be very, very cautious when they're picking a vendor for that, because you can spend a lot of money really quick and either have something that's subpar or not even finished sometimes. Social media and search strategy is an example of like a year-long program. So, you know, having that be going through all 12 months, 12 months also on like a sustaining giving model. And then, of course, you know, we all have like our end of year plans for end of year giving, which really should be thought about in the summertime, but then be launched from the fall through the end of the year, and then move into 2020 planning. And also talking to people about what's going to happen next year is a great way to get them to engage with end of year giving, and hopefully have them pad that gift with a little bit extra, because you're sharing the vision of what's going to happen in the future. So in the future, so going back to kind of some of those questions we talked about in the beginning, is our organization easy to find? There's lots of ways that you can do tests for this, of doing Google searches for things that have to do with your ministry yourself. However, if you work for the organization and you're on your own website all the time, you're going to show up pretty good, because Google tracks all of that stuff. So finding out how to get a ranking report of, like, are we showing up for the people who are looking for us? You know, to put it like really, really easy, really oversimplify things, I like to think of like search engine is for the people who are looking for what we do in some way, and we need to pull them in and make sure that they can find us. I look at social media and those other kind of digital mediums as that's like the push mentality of like, I'm going to push information out in front of this audience because I think if I tell them this information, they're going to realize that they need us. So if I am a teenager who's going through a bunch of, you know, hard stuff, now I'm going to give you so many examples because I'm part of a couple mentor programs of the stuff that we hear is just insane that these kids are going through. But if something shows up in their Instagram feed or their Facebook, like saying, hey, like, you should come check out our church, it's amazing. And like, that's what shows up in front of them. They're going to keep scrolling. But if they see something that shows up in their feed, the graphic is great and the content talks about like, hey, are you feeling alone? Think that there's more out there? Like, come check out our Alpha program, you know, and something that's different coming at the, trying to think of those different ways of what kind of content can we push out in front of our audience that's then going to draw them back in, and thinking through what those felt needs are and speaking to those versus speaking to like what we have. Speak to what their needs are, because they'll realize that once they get there that you have it, and it's that should be found in Jesus. So could we have more people engage with us, and what would it mean to have to the people we serve if we increased our growth? So this just kind of breaks down again, like going back to that website strategy. These are some key talking points to be talking about. If you're looking at a website provider, you know, what's the initial site development and launch time? There should be two launches that happen with any website project you do. A soft launch, which just means that it's a live link. The website is pretty much operational. It works. You're looking at it as a team, seeing how it functions. And then there's your full-time public launch that happens, which is called a hard launch usually. The different things that are included, is it the full website redesign? Are you using existing content and bringing it over? Who's creating that content? Is it premium plugins that they're using? There's a bunch of website designers that will use free plugins. Usually those are the ones that are less secure. It's where you're going to see sites that crash. If you're dealing with donations and PCI compliance and accepting money, it's super important to have premium and secure things that are going on your website. Are they willing to do consulting? Any strategy? Are they taking the photos? Are you doing all the photos and graphics? These are all things to be thinking about, because if you don't ask those questions on the front end, they'll give you a quote saying it's X amount of money for your website and in this many hours, and then you sign off on that contract and you write them that check, and then they come back and say, well, we didn't agree to do it, help you with any of that content. We didn't agree to write anything. And you're like, I'm not a copywriter. How do I know how to write? I mean, I know I'm passionate about what we do, but I don't know how to write about it. So making sure you're thinking through those things and who's going to be doing those tasks is super crucial to be getting an accurate idea of what it's the investment's actually going to be, and then who's going to support it, and what's the hosting look like. You know, if you're going to host it yourself, is it hosted on a private server with them? These are all things, again, that are going to affect not only the cost, but also the functionality and security of your website once it's launched. So things to think about. See, he's taking a picture, so we'll wait to move for 1 second.
But. What are some thoughts about, we were with a company for a while, but it was proprietary based, not
open source.
Well, so they created it.
Yeah, so it's proprietary, not open source.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the big...
WordPress.
Website. Yeah, WordPress. So,
yep. Yeah.
It wasn't going to be WordPress based.
Yep.
And I thought, well, that's cool, except that Dale and I were kind of stuck with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, I mean, one of the big guys out there is proprietary. So what are your thoughts on that? Is it a big deal to do that? Because then you can't easily convert to WordPress later, necessarily. And if you have any kind of problem with it, nobody else knows.
A lot of questions in there. So I'll just like be blunt.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, if it's proprietary, I would go the other direction.
Yeah.
Unless it has to be proprietary.
No, we didn't.
So like there's 99.9% of ministries or companies don't need something that's proprietary.
Yeah.
I would always recommend going with something that's open source, because that way if something happens with that particular provider, whether it's during the design process or after launch, you have the opportunity to call any number of the thousands of other WordPress providers that are out there, or Drupal or Joomla or whatever. There's a ton of different open source platforms that are out there. WordPress is by far most commonly used one. It's the most common one that we use to design, because just because of how many applications and plugins there are that are available that are premium. My recommendation would be to go the other direction.
Yeah.
When I started in digital marketing over a decade ago, that was the most common strategy for retaining support clients, was that they would design in proprietary code so that no one else could even figure out what to do. Like, every time I go, you ask me to make this one, you're like, I hate my guy. Scott sucks. Darren, can you help me fix this? And we'd go in and try and fix something and be like, well, you fix this one like paragraph of content, and they had it so string coded together for then like two other pages would stop working because you copy and pasted some text into this totally different page. So you had to call Scott and be like, he'd be like, well, now that someone else touched it, now it's going to be another $300 to fit, you know, or whatever. So it was this nightmare. So I'd go the other way, man. I would definitely try and stick with open source for sure.
So is the new NGA website, is that WordPress?
I believe so, yeah. Liz is nodding her head yes, huh?
Did you guys develop it?
No, we did not. We did the search engine optimization. We helped with like questions to ask, but when we were talking with their team, they were already working with that provider. So we didn't do that one. Mm-mm. We could have. Like quality-wise, it's great. So I'm not like disparaging, just to be clear. Don't go tell on me, you guys. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, we didn't do that one. So on the growth strategy side, these are the kind of the different talking points that we went through. So looking at that paid search opportunity, please check out the Google Grant program. I don't receive any money or endorsements for you guys using it. It's a great resource for anyone to use. There is a whole suite of services that you can use through Google for nonprofits at no or very little cost. So looking at that paid search piece, so there's two kind of pieces here that I put. So grant management and then custom search engine marketing campaign, which is those paid ads. So real briefly, the main caveat with using the Google Grant program is that you will, number one, have to be a nonprofit that qualifies. And number two, the cost per click can only be up to $2. And so I'll explain that really quick. So if you think through how that animal works from a marketing perspective, you can show a paid click ad to 1 million people and it doesn't cost anyone anything unless someone clicks on it. So they call it pay per click, or PPC. And then there's the cost per click, or the CPC, lots of acronyms. So the cost per click has to be less than $2. And the next question most people are thinking is, well, how do we know how much it's going to cost per click? The answer is that there's ways that once you've been trained on how to set those campaigns up that you can look at it. But the real basic answer is it's based on like seventh grade economics. It's just supply versus demand. So the supply is how many people are actually searching for that search term that you're trying to pay to show up for. The demand is based on how many organizations or companies are willing to pay for that supply. So if you have a really obscure service set that you offer as a ministry, like you have a ministry that sews the ripped off arms back onto teddy bears, and you give those to the kids that are super sad about it, and that's your ministry, and so you want to pay for, you know, limb surgery for teddy bears, right? Like, there's probably not a whole lot of other organizations that are paying for that audience, so the cost per click is going to be like 3 cents. But if it's very, very high, like, you know, how do we support hunger relief or something like that, then there's a high demand for that, so the cost per click might be like $4 per click just to get someone to your website. It's not going to qualify for the grant program. So if you're a smaller organization, a great place to start is utilizing the grant program. Get as much as you can get out of that for the search terms that qualify for that under $2. And then the secondary piece would be looking at, like, what are our top search terms that we want to pay for traffic for that might cost a little bit more that are outside that program. On the social media side, looking at your demographic, geographic targeting, targeting only desired users, fans, and supporters, making sure you're tracking those leads through some sort of database or your website, and then being found organically. So we're kind of looking at, again, those, if you remember that graph on that search results page, you had the gray people, which will find you through the paid search because it's the first stuff they see. You had the half, 50% of the people are green, which are finding you through organic or paid, or excuse me, SEO-driven results. And then you have blue folks that find you through social media. So this is kind of encompassing those three main groups and how people find you. These are the different kind of components of that.
So for those of us who maybe have tinkered with it but are not necessarily certified, do you, like, maybe the answer is just get certified, but when you choose your keywords or terms that you want to find, the quality of those search terms is what dictates whether you get the full 10,000, right? So how do you optimize the spending, like, so that you gain more of that 10,000 than not, right? Because if it's not rated right, you get...
Correct. So the... basically what he's asking is, how do you get the most out of that grant program as possible? And the answer to that is pretty simple, really. So if you're going to do any sort of paid search, whether utilizing the grant program or not, before you do that, you'd want to do a bunch of search engine optimization. And so I think we're at the end, which is good. So this is like Q&A time. Yeah.
Is that like embedding things into your site?
Yes. I'm trying to think. I don't know if there. I don't want to have to click back a bunch of times. So we'll see if we can jump to it really quick, just so I can give you a visual for this question. Which should just take 1 second. So, like, on this search engine page here. There you go. So when you do a search, the reality is the search engine is just trying to show you the most relevant results in order. And what they're doing is they're instantly looking at, you know, a bunch of different things on your website to see if someone's looking for church resources, is it mentioned in the title of this ad? Is it mentioned in the description of the web page? Is it mentioned on their heading tags of their website? Is it mentioned within their URL? There's all these, like, check boxes, right? So we'll just say there's 10. So if there's 7 of those 10 check boxes that are checked off, then that means that you're more relevant, which means they're going to show you higher up on the free or search engine optimization area of the search results page. It also means, if all those check boxes are checked, that your ad is going to show up more times. It also means that the quality of your page as ranked by the search engine is higher, which means that the cost per click is going to go lower, which means the grant dollars are going to go further. So it all starts with search engine optimization, even if you're wanting to do paid ads, because they're like married. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. So my official presentation is done, but we totally have time for questions if you guys have questions. Be more than happy to answer those for you guys, but I was trying to burn through that as quick as we could because I know we're only supposed to take so much time. Am I doing okay, Liz? Okay. Okay. Good deal. Does anyone have any questions, Al? Yeah.
So general audience size, like social media increase, what sort of metrics would you say put you in would show that you're growing at the right pace? Does that make sense? Obviously everyone has different sizes of likes,
yeah,
follows or whatever, but is there a percentage basis for say Facebook or Instagram?
It's honest, every organization is totally different. Because it really depends on if you are putting dollars and investing in that or if it's just based on organic content. I mean, there's really not I would say...
There's no standard email marketing metrics or anything?
Not really. I mean, I know that there's a bunch of industry standards that you could look at, I guess, but my answer just based on my experience would be that it's totally different. And I mean, I would say that if you're looking at year over year, I mean, at a minimum, you'd want to be in a 15% growth range to know that you're on track. But I mean, there's organizations that we talk to and we've worked with and where you start running a campaign and I mean, they quadruple over the course of 90 days just because of, that's an extreme example, but it's when you're going from an example of them not doing any, having no real content strategy as far as what content they're putting out. They haven't been putting any money behind it or anything like that, and then all of a sudden they have some event coming up, and so we ramp into a bunch of activity and a bunch of funds that are going into that, and then it just kind of explodes. So, I mean, it really depends on what the initiative is, I'd say.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the value of, the giveaways on the front page, your landing page, download this free PDF book?
Absolutely.
Positive.
So positive, yeah. Yeah, having something that's tangible that they can receive for giving up their contact information is a huge benefit. It's, in the retail or, business space, that's why there's so many that, hey, first-time customer, you get 10% off, but you have to give us your email first. That's before you've even made your purchase. So I would say there's a huge benefit to that. And, having something that's able to be switched out, at least every few months, it doesn't have to be every month that you're changing what that downloadable piece is. But switching that up a few times a year so that you can see which ones perform better and also be tracking how many, the same person might come back and download everything that you're doing. That's someone I'd follow up with, if you start to see that kind of behavior. So.
Do you have any opinion on ClickFunnels or any of their, as far as their tools on there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
Can you reproduce everything that they do independently?
Independently? Yeah, you can. I mean, there can be a benefit to sometimes, especially if you have a bunch of content that's available to be doing something like that. But I mean, for most ministries, I wouldn't think it'd be a necessary thing to just to have it be set up that way. Yeah. Were you going to ask something?
Yeah, so just, the old adage, any marketing is good marketing. We recently had a situation come up where we're having a third party utilize our new youth center facility. That is not a ministry, they're just a nonprofit educational piece for kids.
Yeah.
And they asked if it was okay if they were to do the marketing on our behalf, attached all of our posts to them, put our logo on their website. It's still up in the air for us because, it's one of those things where we're very intentional. We're a ministry. We proclaim the gospel, they're not. Things to be cautious on, because I know you're talking about strategic partnerships, but being careful in that realm of the digital piece, does that same adage, correspond over to where back in the day any marketing that people are talking about us is good?
Well, number one, I don't know if I agree with that statement, because we've definitely seen some pieces of content that are not good. But, I mean, I would say as long as they, align with what you're doing, high level, from a belief standpoint, then I wouldn't see a problem with it. I get what's the purpose in their eyes of associating together that way?
Well, they're just excited because they're a new up-and-coming nonprofit where they're just doing educational pieces for youth.
Yeah.
That's not ministry at all. And they wanted to be able to attach themselves to LifeLight.
Sure.
So just as far as from the digital aspect, should we be very careful in protecting ourselves or hey, this is a cool opportunity, we're reaching out to other...
I mean, it sounds like they kind of want to ride your coattails a little bit, you know, which is fine as long as you trust them and believe in what they're doing. I would say I don't see a problem with it, you know? Yeah. Good questions.
So how much is too much? Posting, say, Facebook posts or Instagram, 6-8. I mean, we were talking to a marketing guy and something else, and he was saying, be sure you're posting 10 to 12 times a day. And he says, hey, we don't want to be that guy. And he goes, you won't be that guy because they're so short-lived.
Yeah.
He said, and I couldn't go to 12 times a day, but I went with 6, and nobody even noticed. I mean, that it was, and they were very post different things, you know.
Sure.
Rotating routine, but what's too much?
I don't know that it is too much as long as the content is different and I don't want to say newsworthy because it's social media necessarily, but you know what I mean, postworthy. So from a follower perspective, I don't think that there's anything that's too much because likely not everyone's going to see it, like you know we talked about earlier, right? But from a logistical standpoint and like your time commitment standpoint, I mean, that's where I would say that's where you have to determine what those lines look like. Like, is it worth it to for yourself time wise or to pay someone
We were able to set a deal where it's just a routine, or, you know, you just go through what used to be Hootsuite. I don't know what. But set up, so it took about 2 hours and you're set for the week, you know.
Sure. I mean, if you can set up, what did you say, 12 a day?
That's what this guy was recommending.
But is that what you're doing?
Well, no, we cut it back to 6.
Okay, so if someone's developing 42 pieces of content for you that are good in 2 hours, if you can give me their number afterwards, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, you just want to find out, for example, to get your capabilities. Now, take, for example, you were to post on Facebook, for example, a video.
Uh-huh.
Now, would you recommend someone to do probably maybe you record a video and you do the post too, or you do it live? And also the tendency if you're doing live is that once you're doing live, for example, and as you're doing live video, record your Facebook, for example, as you can see people were commenting, there's always that temptation to, hey, you know, to call people's name, and especially if you recognize them. I don't know if... does that help what you do? I mean, can you maybe just try a little bit more like, I don't know if you get the point.
I do. I mean, I would say there are two different types of content and between those two. So, you know, doing a live video is a live video, and having a fully edited, fully produced video that you post independently is also something else. Because you can't typically do them at, you can't do a fully produced edited video live, otherwise it wouldn't be live, right? So, I mean, having that like raw type of content that's like, hey, this is what I'm up to right now, and that kind of thing can be great for your page. It does help with like as far as engagements and tracking that Facebook does, as far as how many people engage with your content. It would help you there as far as stats go. I would say that I'd encourage you to do both. Ask your question for like giving someone a shout out if they say hi.
Yeah.
That depends on what type of live video and what your ministry looks like. I mean, is this your personal page or is it your ministry page? Are you the evangelist? And so it's, you have this, you are your own brand. Then I would say it depends on who you're giving a shout out to and what type of live video you're doing, you know, cause it's kind of like each situation is different on whether you'd want to say hi or not. You know what I mean? If you're posting as a ministry page and it's not, you're not your own brand, obviously I probably wouldn't be giving a shout out to someone who's on there. But if you are your own brand and it's some ministry partner or someone else that's saying hi and you want to say hi back because it's a really candid personal video that you're doing, just wanting to interact with your audience, then I would say absolutely give them a shout out, because the likelihood that if that is the case and it is appropriate to give them a shout out, if you do that, the likelihood that they're going to stay watching your video for longer is much higher, which will improve the number of your video minutes that have been watched, and the length of time. And if someone completed your whole video, and all of those stats are things that Facebook and Instagram monitor, and they'll show your content more often, the higher those stats go.
And then also, for example, I have this question. Now, what if, for example, you have a ministry page and a personal page, but you've been more used to your personal page, and most of your engagement, for example, is through your personal page. But then you feel like you want to switch, but you just newly created the ministry page, and you have no engagement on there. I don't know if you continue through your personal page, or must you do the switch from, you know.
That's a hard one. I mean, I would say I would be trying to encourage people to go follow your ministry page if you're your own brand as your ministry, you know, versus trying to have them always interact through your personal one. Like, I have mine separate, you know, as like there's my personal one, which are my personal connections and people that get to see pictures of my kids and all that stuff, right? And then there's, you know, other places where I'd post more like ministry stuff. So depending on what your long-term goals are, I would say keep on trying to push people towards that page for ministry stuff. But then you have to be the one also to have self-control and not be posting on your personal page your ministry stuff. Go to your ministry page and post that. If you want to try and keep drawing people back there, go post it on your ministry page and then share it to your own page so that they see it. But then, you know, say, hey, go follow. Look, check out my new post on my ministry page. Check it out. But then it's pointing them back to that. You get what I'm saying? So you have to start to have self-control and differentiate what types of content are going to be in either place. Like, this one is all ministry, all business. This one is just Willard, right? Is that your name?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is just Willard, the guy, you know, that's over here with his family or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But wouldn't it have lower interaction on the ministry page? Like, my personal page has higher interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the algorithms, and like the ministry page has nothing unless I pay money.
Yep.
Is that?
It just depends on what you're like. If your goals are to try and start building that up.
Sure. But you really have to work at it now.
You do.
The way it works now, because
it takes a long. It takes time. Yeah, and I mean, and that's where doing what I just described is a way to still get that interaction. It's just you're sharing it back to that page so that, because there's some percentage of your audience. Let's say you get me just make up a number. Let's say normally when you do it on your own personal page, 50 people interact with it, but only 10 of them are currently fans of your ministry page. There's some percentage of people that are not a fan of your ministry page yet. They're going to see that and eventually start clicking over and then start following your ministry page. I'm not you know, that familiar with your ministry too, but like if you are your own brand, that's where it can get really hard to start differentiating the two. But eventually, if you're trying to grow and have it be a big thing, you know, it's going to eventually happen. So,
is Instagram the same way as far as with your Facebook page?
Uh-huh.
So same deal. They don't see it unless just a very small percentage of the people follow the Instagram.
It's less strict on Instagram, but the algorithm is very similar.
So those percentages carry over to Instagram as well, that 41%?
It's very similar. Yep, it's in the same range. Yep. So it's a difficult. It's super hard, man.
I mean, our staff are coming up to us and asking us, when was the last time you guys posted anything? Like,
yep.
We've been posting every day this last week, and our own staff isn't even seeing it.
Yep. Welcome to the world of monetization and capitalism.
Please.
America.
Yeah.
Are we tight on time, Liz?
Yeah.
Okay, this is gonna be the last one. I can talk to you guys outside afterwards, but
now, as you, for example, you actually want to do most of your posts on your news page, and then you're more used to, or people are more accurate to your personal page. Now, is it gonna be the same thing, broadcasting from your news page and copying to your personal page, and also, or broadcasting from your personal page and copying to your news page? Is it gonna be the same thing?
Correct. I would recommend going from your ministry page back to your personal one.
Okay.
Yep. Well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Darren.
Appreciate spending the time together.